There are a lot of stars up there in the night sky, some planets, galaxies too, but many of us live in places where we just can't see them with all the lights shining in our neighborhoods, and many of us don't give them a close look, even if we can.
Our next guest says we've lost something that for most of human history, we had a close connection with the stars. They helped us tell stories, pass on legends, and know where we were in the world.
Gene Tracy joins us now. He's a professor of physics and director of the Center for Liberal Arts at the College of William and Mary. His essay, Sky Readers, recently appeared in Neon Magazine. Gene, welcome to the show.
Thanks for inviting me. It's great to be on.
Looking back, what first drew you to look up at the stars?
Well, when I was a child, as I mentioned in the essay, I grew up on a farm. And so upstate New York, the night skies are just spectacular. I was born right around within a couple months of Sputnik getting launched. And so my parents were, kind of always talking about that when I was growing up. And so it was the height of the, space age was new. And so there was a lot of excitement there. My father was a big dreamer. And so it was always something that we talked about.
And most of human history, we were like you. We looked up at the stars. We had great views in prehistory, too, for that matter. You write that we had really a friendship with the stars. What would that have looked like?
Well, I try to talk a little bit about, for example, the Polynesians, who I only learned about fairly recently. I was preparing a course and doing a lot of background reading for it and just got fascinated by this story of how the Polynesians populated the whole, all the inhabitable islands in the Pacific. And what it must have been like to be out in the middle of the open Pacific in the middle of the night and look up and see the stars. I think that the recent movie, The Life of Pi, there are a couple scenes there where he evokes that. It must have just been spectacular. And they use these, the night sky to help know where they were. If they were sailing between islands, they might have been out in the open ocean for weeks at a time. And yet they weren't just randomly wandering around. They were looking for cues. They were looking for cues in the sky. They were looking for cues in the water. Occasionally they might see a bird by noting where it came from and where it flew off to. Even if it was over the horizon, they would know there was land in that direction. And so I've just always been fascinated by people who, live closer to nature and closer to the land. I'm not a Luddite. I don't reject modern society or modern technology. I'm a physicist. I love a lot of that. But what I always think what we need to do is humanize it. Take those parts that we want, but make sure we're not leaving behind things we don't want to leave behind.
Well, yeah, talk some about how we've lost that connection. What changed that we don't keep our eyes on the stars and know where we are, our place in the universe, by looking at them?
Most of us now live in urban environments or suburban environments where the night sky is just a dim memory. Most of my students, if I ask them, is the moon out during the day, most of them don't realize it's out during the day half the time. They've never noticed it. When we teach astronomy, the first thing we try to do is to, I teach intro astronomy mostly to non-scientists and people who don't intend to become scientists. One of the first things we do is we teach them how to look at the sky, how to orient yourself and, which way's north and where's the ecliptic, where are you likely to find planets and where you're not going to find planets in the sky and so forth, to help them begin to see the sky.
Well, what do we lose when we don't see the sky, when we don't have that picture of it?
I was on a camping trip in Yosemite some years ago, and we were out for about a week. And over the course of the week, what struck me was how attuned I became to the fact that the stars were rising a little later each night. The moon was in a slightly different part of the sky each night. Maybe Jupiter had shifted. And there was this, it was much easier to imagine myself as being part of all that. When we basically figure out where we are by asking Google Maps, to put us on a map. We don't connect to the world as much. You know, we're allowing our machines do it for us.
Talking to Gene Tracy, director of the Center for the Liberal Arts at William & Mary in University, talking about an essay he wrote about our disconnect from the universe, from the stars in the sky. And Gene, you write that this is an important part of our sense of where we are and who we are. And I think back, you know, any early civilization, whether you're talking about Incas or ancient Greece or ancient China, they told their stories, their myths, they situated them up in the stars. Do we have a need, do you think, a basic yearning to connect with the stars, and we're missing something on a personal level?
I do. Oftentimes, the question of whether or not humans should go into space is kind of couched in terms of costs. And, you know, comparing the cost of what it takes to, say, send a probe to Pluto versus, you know, investing more in healthcare. I think those are false choices. I think for a lot of people, exploring the solar system is part of who we are, this yearning to kind of not only go look, but actually go stand on another world. That for some people, that's what helps give life meaning, that we can aspire to that. So that's kind of what I was trying to get at in the essay, that by trying to connect our science and technology back to what the original motivations were, you know, the sense of wonder, the sense of curiosity, the sense of awe, that we connect our science, you know, through those groundings, we connect our science back to things like literature, art, religion, philosophy, you know, the humanities.
You write that the people you'd think would be the most connected to the stars, often astronomers themselves, because of the way they use technology, they don't really get to look straight at the night sky anymore. They don't get to put their discovery in that perspective.
Yeah, my students are often shocked to find that, most astronomical observation now, most astronomers rarely go visit the telescope. They don't have to. You know, travel to, say, the top of Mauna Kea in Hawaii or Cerro Tololo in Chile is still fairly expensive, and if you don't have to do it, you may have courses to teach back home. You may have other duties to teach back home. If you can just download the data to your local computer and work with it there, why not do it? And so it's really changed the way astronomy is done over the last, you know, 30, 40 years.
One thing I thought reading your piece, when I'm out of the city and in a place where I can really see the stars, what strikes me, I read a lot of history and I think, you know, with very few changes, these are the same stars that people were looking at 100 years ago, 1,000 years ago, 10,000 years ago. That there's that through line of connection with our ancestors who looked up at the effectively the same sky. Or do you think that's something we're missing?
Yeah, that part of what we try to do in a liberal arts education, you mentioned I'm director of the Center for Liberal Arts. One of the things we've done here at William & Mary is we've revisited our general education curriculum and we've reformed it. We've changed it. And one of the ways we've changed it is to try to help encourage the faculty to stretch a bit and to think about when you're teaching a course for general education that you're teaching it from a liberal arts perspective. And so what we try to do is encourage faculty to think about, well, when you're teaching a student about math or physics and so forth, to encourage you to think about that in a historical context or in a wider cultural context and so forth, because it helps the students then see how that material connects to the larger human story.
When you talk to your colleagues, the professors, to students about this, are they enthusiastic? Once they hear the case for understanding the night sky, do they want to get out and do it?
Some of them do. We've got a pretty active astronomy club here in Williamsburg. It's funny, I just exchanged an email with a faculty member, not in any of the sciences, but over in one of the social science institutes here on campus, and he was reaching out because he knew we have some folks interested in astronomy in the physics department. He has this incredible facility at his home just outside of town. So there are people who love to think about the stars, who love to look at them. I mean, when you look at them directly, they're pretty awesome if you've got some good viewing. But if you look at them through even binoculars or a telescope, it just jumps out at you how much they look like jewels. There's so many different colors. And when you look at the planets, you know, they take on a shape, they take on a coloration. You know, it's an amazing thing.
Can you leave us with some encouragement for any of us to get out and just find a less well-lit nighttime place and look up at the sky?
Oh, yeah. Just get out and look up. You know, think about the fact that a lot of the photographs that you see, for example, of Andromeda Galaxy, this wonderful whirlpool galaxy, it's an iconic image, that actually is 10 times the size of the full moon. That the photo that you see of the Orion Nebula, that's, you know, if you hold your hand up at arm's length, it spans that part of the sky. So there's all of that going on up there that we just aren't able to see with the naked eye. We need that technology to see it. But that in some ways the technology gets between us and the world. And we need to be, you know, alive to that too.
Gene, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Oh, thank you. It was fun.
That was physics professor Gene Tracy from the College of William and Mary in Virginia.
Coming up after the news, we'll look at the impact of Act 10, 5 years to the day after it was first introduced by Governor Walker. I'm Veronica Wicker.
And I'm Rob Farah. This is Central Time here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.